This is the Clinical Pharmacology Podcast with Nathan Tuescher, where I discuss clinical pharmacology and pharmacometrics topics from the perspective of drug development scientists. Welcome back to the Clinical Pharmacology Podcast. Today's topic is the FDA and ICH guidance E14 titled, quote, Clinical Evaluation of QT-QTC Interval Prolongation and Proarrhythmic Potential for Non-Antiarrhythmic Drugs. This guidance outlines the analyses and clinical evaluations used to evaluate some cardiac risks of new therapeutics. These guidance documents have evolved over the past 25 years, and there are many new options for these evaluations that you may want to consider to support your drug development program. In addition, the US FDA and the EMA and most other regulatory agencies are aligned on this topic, so a single set of evaluations will generally suffice across all of your registration packages. I'll start with background on the reason for these evaluations, then move on to an overview of the key evaluations needed. We'll discuss in some detail the thorough QT study and the concentration QT analysis. Then I'll provide some parting thoughts from my experiences with these analyses. The guidance on the evaluation of prolongation of the QT interval was based on clinical observations of serious adverse events that occurred with approved drugs. In 1996, François Desertain, a French physician, described an abnormal heart rhythm that he called torsade de pointes, literally a twisting of peaks on the ECG tracing. This heart rhythm can lead to sudden cardiac death. When patients taking some common medications were observed with this condition, drug developers and regulators began evaluating potential biomarkers that could predict the probability of a torsade de pointes event. The QT interval from the ECG tracing appeared to be associated, with a lengthening of that interval being more likely for an adverse event. The QT interval represents the time the heart takes to repolarize or charge up. Thus, a delay in that time could cause an abnormal heartbeat. While not a perfect biomarker, it was decided that rigorous evaluation of the QT interval could help avoid administration of drugs that could contribute to sudden cardiac death. The QT interval is the time between the beginning of the QRS complex and the end of the T wave. This interval normally changes with heart rate, because as your heart beats faster, it has less time to repolarize. Thus, we generally analyze the corrected QT interval, or the QTC interval, rather than the raw QT values. There are recommendations for in vitro and non-clinical experiments to evaluate the potential of a new therapeutic to prolong the QT interval. However, clinical evaluation is a must, even if the non-clinical results appear clean. The initial guidance recommended using a clinical study design to evaluate the QT prolongation in healthy volunteers. If the QT prolongation was within an acceptable limit of 10 to 20 milliseconds, further intensive cardiac monitoring would not be required in clinical development. The 10 millisecond value is used for all drugs except for oncology products, which use the 20 millisecond value. If the QT prolongation exceeded the limit, further intensive testing of QT prolongation in patients was recommended in future development studies to further understand the potential risks to patients. For almost 15 years, this was the standard method for evaluating QT prolongation in clinical development. Then, a group of industry and regulatory experts introduced a model-based PK/PD approach to evaluating the QT prolongation potential for a drug that did not require a thorough QT study. This was called, or is called, a concentration QT or concentration QTC analysis. In this analysis, a PK/PD model derived from observed clinical data is used to ascertain the predicted QT prolongation. This new model-based method is now the new standard, with a thorough QT study generally only being used when a concentration QT analysis has not been performed or the results of the model-based analysis are not clear. Before I begin discussing these two analysis methods, I want to give a short review of the heart rate correction for the QT interval. As I noted earlier, the QT interval naturally shortens as the heart rate increases, and the QT interval lengthens as the heart rate slows. Conceptually, this makes sense to me. Let's say I'm resting and I decide to go for a run. As I start to run, my heart rate increases to provide more oxygen to my muscles and tissues. As the heart beats more times per minute, the time available to get ready for the next heartbeat decreases. Then, after my run while I'm stretching, my heart rate slows as there is less need for oxygen by my muscles. With that slowing, the time available for the heart between heartbeats increases. So if you want to compare QT interval changes at two different time points, you need to adjust for differences in the heart rate. There are three common correction methods used for the QT interval, but the vast majority of studies rely on the Friderichia correction. All corrections use the QT interval and the RR interval. The RR interval is the time between successive heartbeats measured in milliseconds. Heart rate is the average number of beats per minute, while the RR interval is a specific time between two heartbeats. The Friderichia's correction is the QT interval divided by the RR interval raised to the 0.33 power, or the cube root of the RR interval. The Bizet's correction is the QT interval divided by the RR interval raised to the 0.5 power, or the square root of the RR interval. You can find these equations in the ICH E14 guidance linked in the show notes. These corrections were developed based on observed data and appeared to give constant QTC values over a range of RR values. So to test the quality of the correction, you can plot the corrected QT versus the RR values and see if the data have a slope close to zero. If not, the correction is not adequate. The last type of correction is called the individual correction. In this case, the QT and RR are plotted for each individual subject, and a nonlinear regression is performed to solve for the optimal exponent for RR that will result in a flat corrected QT versus RR plot. As I said, while Bizet's correction is commonly used in clinical practice, Friderichia correction is generally more accurate with elevated heart rates. Thus, Friderichia's is normally used for QTC analyses. If, however, the Friderichia's correction is not adequate, the individual correction method may be used. Now that we have the fundamentals of the QT prolongation analysis outlined, I can begin discussing the two methods of analysis that are used for clinical evaluations. First, we'll talk about the thorough QT study. I want to start with that because it is probably the most common evaluation that many people have heard about. It was the first method proposed and used for nearly 10 years. However, it is not what I recommend you start with in your drug development program today. The second method, the concentration QTC model-based analysis, is the preferred starting point and can actually eliminate the need for a thorough QT clinical study in many cases. It is a newer method and requires both early planning for your phase 1 clinical studies and some pharmacometrics experience. However, it is much more powerful, efficient, and less expensive. A thorough QT clinical study is a well-controlled clinical study in healthy volunteers designed to evaluate the potential of a drug to prolong the QT interval. Much like a drug-drug interaction study is optimized to evaluate a potential drug interaction, everything in the thorough QT study is optimized to evaluate QT prolongation. These studies are also called TQT studies. The endpoint for TQT studies is the mean change from baseline for the corrected QT interval. This is also called the delta QTC. The delta QTC is calculated for each treatment, and then the active drug treatment is compared to the placebo treatment to get the delta QTC, or double delta QTC. If the upper bound of the 95% confidence interval for the mean delta QTC is 10 milliseconds or higher, further cardiac evaluations will be needed in future clinical studies. If that upper bound is less than 10 milliseconds, then there is normally low regulatory concern about QT prolongation. Sometimes the study results are labeled positive for a QT effect if the 10 millisecond threshold is exceeded, and negative for QT effects if the 10 millisecond threshold is not reached. Most TQT studies have three or four treatment arms. Those are placebo, moxifloxacin as a positive control, and one or two dose levels of the drug. A crossover study is strongly recommended. each participant should receive each treatment with an appropriate washout. If a crossover study is not possible due to a long half-life of the drug, a parallel study can be conducted with different participants for each treatment, but the sample size will be larger. The study is double-blind so that neither the participants nor the clinical staff are aware of the administered treatments. This also means your manufacturing team will need to procure both a placebo for your drug as well as for moxifloxacin. The moxifloxacin is usually handled by over-encapsulating in a gelatin capsule to make blinding much simpler. The placebo treatment is designed to give a baseline for the natural changes in QT interval that may occur over the course of the treatment protocol. Participants are connected to a 12-lead ECG for 24 hours, and clinical staff are in and out of the room at various times. These procedures alone can lead to changes in heart rate and QT interval, so understanding the changes when there are no drugs on board is an important reference point. Moxifloxacin is a drug that is known to cause a small prolongation in the QT interval. Thus, it is included as a positive control so that you can show that QT prolongation is possible given your clinical study design and these participants. There is no need to compare moxifloxacin or the size of the moxifloxacin effect to the size of the effect of the drug product. The only purpose of moxifloxacin is to show that a signal could be detected in your specific clinical study. The drug treatment arms are present to evaluate the effect of the drug on the QT interval. If there is high confidence that no effect of the drug would be observed, a single dose level is used. That single dose level is usually 3 to 10-fold above the therapeutic dose. This gives information about high levels of drug exposure that could occur in either overdose situations or if there are drug interactions that inhibit the clearance of the drug. Sometimes two dose levels are used to better understand the range of QT prolongation for a drug. The doses are commonly the highest therapeutic dose and a second dose that is again 3 to 10-fold above the therapeutic dose. The highest dose level used in a TQT study can be limited by the safety of the drug from prior clinical or non-clinical work, the absorption characteristics of the drug, for example, if there's saturable absorption at higher doses, and potentially other clinical considerations. There is no rule that the highest dose has to be a specific multiple higher than the therapeutic dose, but it's important to be at least some value above the highest therapeutic dose so that you can have a safety margin. The general TQT study design includes a baseline period, a treatment period, and a washout period for each of the treatment arms. When I speak about QTC measurements during the study, all of these are done using a 12-lead ECG system that makes a digital recording of the ECG. Paper ECG printouts are not used for QT evaluations. At each time point where an ECG is captured, there should be three successive ECG measurements around the time of the sample. This is called a triplicate ECG. Using an electronic system like a 24-hour Holter monitor makes extraction of these triplicate ECGs much easier than manually capturing three distinct ECGs. During the baseline period, ECGs are taken prior to dose administration to establish baseline QTC values for the delta QTC calculations. Time-matched baseline samples are not required, and you can generally get away with 3 to 5 baseline time points prior to the dose. Time-matched baselines are when you take ECGs at the same exact time points 24 hours before and after dose administration. This was considered the best practice in early studies, but multiple publications have shown that it's not necessary. During the treatment period, triplicate ECGs are taken at 10 to 15 time points over 24 hours. It is important to capture ECGs at or near the expected Tmax for both your drug and moxifloxacin in your sampling. Because the study is blinded, you have to use the same sampling schedule for all treatments. During the washout period, ECGs are not required to be taken, but you want to ensure sufficient time for washout of any drug that was administered. You then repeat the baseline, treatment, and washout periods for each of the treatment arms. So for a 4-arm TQT study, you could have 20 ECG time points per arm, each with a triplicate ECG. That's 240 ECG measurements per patient. and these studies normally include approximately 24 participants. So your database will include nearly 6,000 individual electronic ECG tracings that need to be evaluated. That is a lot of data. Each ECG is read, and the various ECG intervals are calculated. I won't go into details, but there are human and computer reading algorithms that are used to calculate each ECG interval on those 6,000 ECG tracings. Then you have to analyze all of that data. The first step in the analysis is to calculate the average for each triplicate data point. So for the 1 hour data point, you calculate the average QT interval across the three triplicate ECG values in that database. You repeat this for the RR interval and all the other intervals. Now you should have one ECG interval measurement for each time point. The next step is to calculate the corrected QT or QTC for each time point using the Friderichsen correction. You then confirm that that correction method is adequate. If not, you pursue another correction method. Now that you have the QTC for each time point, you can begin to calculate the delta QTC and then the delta-delta QTC values. The baseline QTC is the average of all pre-dose QTC values for each individual treatment arm. A separate baseline is used for each treatment day because baseline can change slightly day to day. A single baseline value is the preferred method today rather than time-matched baseline values. The single baseline for each treatment is then subtracted from each post-dose QTC time point to give the delta QTC for each time point. This is repeated for each arm. At this point, you should have a time course for the change from baseline QTC for each of the four treatments. And just to clarify, the single baseline is the average of anywhere from 3 to 5 QTC values taken before the dose is administered. The delta-delta QTC is calculated using time-matched samples. You subtract the placebo arm delta QTC value from the treatment arm delta QTC value to get the delta-delta QTC for that treatment arm and time point. So if you had 4 treatment arms, you would now have 3 sets of delta-delta QTC time courses for each patient. If you had 3 treatment arms, you'd have 2 sets of delta-delta QTC values. For each individual, you determine the maximum delta-delta QTC value across all time points for each treatment arm. Then you calculate the mean and 95% confidence interval for that mean for each treatment arm. The upper limit of the 95% confidence interval is compared to the 10 millisecond threshold for determination if the study is positive or negative. The positive or negative determination is only made based on the drug treatment arms. The moxifloxacin arm is compared separately just to confirm that a signal could be detected in the study. You may need to go back and listen to that again to catch all of the sequential analyses that need to be done for a TQT study. Those steps take 6,000 ECGs and boil them down to either a positive or a negative study. It is not complicated mathematically, but it is time-consuming and requires attention to detail. That also means that the analyses are expensive to perform. I'll have some more comments about TQT studies at the end of the episode, but for now, let's move on to the second analysis method, the concentration QT analysis. After several years of conducting TQT studies, after the initial guidance was released in the early 2000s, scientists began analyzing ECG data and found that a model-based analysis could be beneficial. The concentration QTC analysis involves evaluating the relationship between drug concentrations and changes in QTC to determine the concentrations at which there could be a regulatory concern. This idea is based on the assumption that QT prolongation is a pharmacologic effect of the drug, such that higher concentrations would lead to greater QT prolongation. So, collection of QTC data in early clinical trials where drug concentration data was also being collected could be used in place of thorough QT studies to evaluate the risk of QT prolongation. Instead of only evaluating QTC effects at 1 or 2 dose levels, the concentration QTC method could evaluate the effects across the wider range of doses used in dose escalation studies of new drugs. In addition, the expensive TQT studies were being left until the very end of development due to their high cost and complexity. Thus, the concentration QTC analysis method permitted earlier evaluation of QT prolongations and lower costs. To conduct a concentration QTC analysis, you will need similar data to what you would collect in the TQT study. First, you will still need triplicate ECGs at multiple time points before and after drug administration. Thus, 3 to 5 baseline ECG measurements and 10 to 15 post-dose ECG measurements using a 12-lead ECG that capture electronic tracings are required. Paper ECGs used for safety evaluations are not sufficient or even useful for a concentration QTC analysis. These digital triplicate ECGs will need to be read and ECG intervals calculated just as described for a TQT study. However, you do not need a moxifloxacin treatment arm. In addition, you don't need a dedicated placebo arm for each participant. In many clinical studies where you have dose escalations, there's some patients who receive placebo, so you still need placebo data for your QTC analysis, but you don't have to have every participant receiving placebo. You then calculate the delta QTC for each participant, and these delta QTC values are used in the concentration QTC analysis. To perform the analysis, you will need a drug concentration measurement for each ECG time point. This means at each time point when you take an ECG tracing, you should also draw a blood sample for determination of drug concentration. Each time point then will have a concentration QTC pair. You will then use a linear mixed effects model with delta QTC as the dependent variable and time, treatment, baseline QTC, and drug concentration as predictors. The model is linear because it is a linear combination of the four predictors: time, treatment, baseline QTC, and drug concentration. It has mixed effects because there are random effects on both the coefficients for the linear effects and on the residual variability of the delta QTC measurement. You can find the form and detail for the linear mixed effects model in the publication Garnett and co-authors that I've linked in the show notes. Please note that the equation in the original publication was incorrect. A correction was issued in a subsequent publication, and I've included a link to the correction in the show notes as well. Please don't use the equation in the original publication. From the concentration QTC model, you can get the mean and 90% confidence interval for the predicted delta QTC across a range of drug concentrations. And you can also calculate the mean and 90% confidence interval for the delta-delta QTC by subtracting the placebo treatment from the drug treatment. Now you have a continuous plot that shows the upper 90% confidence interval across a wide range of concentrations, and you can identify the concentration at which that upper 90% confidence interval hits the 10 millisecond threshold for regulatory concern. What is amazing about this method is that you can then overlay other data on this plot, such as the Cmax for therapeutic and supertherapeutic doses, and identify the predicted change in QTC. You can also show the impact of increased drug concentrations from drug interactions on the plot to show how that might affect QT prolongation. In short, the output from a quality concentration QTC analysis can be reused many times in the development program to predict QT prolongation potential in different scenarios. It is important to confirm that the linear mixed effects model results are robust. This involves evaluation of parameter estimates, generating goodness of fit plots to confirm model assumptions are valid, and identifying any model misspecification. The publication linked in the show notes includes a detailed discussion of those diagnostic methods, and it also shows examples of model misspecification. Finally, it offers options for addressing some of those issues. In my career, I've been involved in at least 20 TQT studies and a similar number of concentration QTC analyses. Over those many studies and analyses, I've learned a few tricks that might be helpful to you. First, start with the concentration QTC analysis. It should be incorporated into your single and multiple ascending dose studies. There will be some additional costs to capture the ECGs and have them read by a cardiology group, but it's well worth every penny that you spend. I recommend that you consult with a group that specializes in ECG collection and reading when you plan your clinical study. They will ensure that you implement the best quality equipment and procedures to minimize risks of poor data collection in your study. And always have a professional cardiology group read the ECGs and calculate the ECG intervals for you. I can't stress this enough. If you're not working with a professional cardiology group on ECG collection and you're just using the clinical site, even if it's a phase one clinical site, you're doing it wrong. Second, you cannot use paper ECGs for concentration QTC analysis. Some people call these safety ECGs, and often they're images of a printed ECG that was read by the investigator during the study as a safety check of the heart. These images of printouts are not sufficiently detailed to permit calculation of the relevant ECG intervals. These are normally only taken once or twice during the study, so they're not adequate number of time points for the analysis. The time of the safety ECG is not usually associated with a drug concentration sample, so you don't even have time-matched concentrations. Finally, the purpose of these ECGs is not for evaluation of QTC, so don't use them for that purpose. Third, always take the triplicate ECG before you take a blood sample. The process of taking a blood sample can change heart rates and result in abnormal ECG measurements. This doesn't mean that you don't do time-matched ECGs and blood samples. Just make sure that you take the ECG measurements first and then draw the blood sample after. If there's a 1 minute gap, that's totally fine. Fourth, I recommend all ECG measurements are taken with the participant in the same body position. Usually sitting in a hospital bed is the best position because it is reproducible. Have the participant sit in the bed for 5 to 10 minutes before the ECG time point. Make sure that they're relaxed. Turn off the TV. Turn off the music. They shouldn't be scrolling on their phone. They should be calm and relaxed. External stimulus can affect cardiac function, so remove it whenever possible. Some clinical sites even close the shades on the window to minimize the impact of sunlight on the procedure. Fifth, double and triple check your QTC calculations. As I mentioned earlier, there's a lot of different averages in these calculations. Open up the raw data and confirm a few calculations for yourself to be confident that the final QTC values in the database are correct. Grab the triplicate QT values for a few subjects. Calculate the average. Does it match the database value for that time point? Calculate the average baseline QTC for a treatment arm for a subject. Does it match the database value? With so many values available, and honestly, a somewhat confusing process of averaging, it is easy to make a mistake that might not be noticed. This is why I recommend going back to the raw ECG values and calculating a few for yourself to confirm that the numbers match your expectations. This will help you both learn the calculation method as well as identify any potential errors or mistakes along the way. And lastly, concentration QTC analyses are one of the most straightforward PK/PD analyses that you can perform. Data is plentiful, the model is predefined, and the results are easily interpreted. Volunteer to do one of these analyses and you will learn a lot about modeling and simulation. This is a great starting point for people that are unsure if they want to learn about pharmacometrics or not. The references I provide in the show notes have a great description of the analyses, how to generate model diagnostics, and the desired outputs. This is the perfect beginner project into the world of pharmacometrics and PK/PD modeling. To wrap up, let me revisit what we discussed today about the evaluation of QT prolongation. QT prolongation is a biomarker for predicting torsades de pointes. Evaluation of the risk of QT prolongation is helpful early in development. Two common methods of evaluation are the thorough QT clinical study that is dedicated to identifying the placebo-corrected change from baseline in QTC at one or two dose levels, and the concentration QTC analysis, which constructs a pharmacometrics model of the change in QTC with changes in drug concentration. The concentration QTC analysis is my recommendation because it can leverage data you are collecting from your first-in-human study, provides answers throughout the development cycle because it's model-based, and is a more flexible solution to the question of risk of QT prolongation. I also shared some practical suggestions for clinical studies in which QTC will be assessed. Good luck with your drug development efforts, and I hope you can implement some of these ideas to assess QT prolongation in the future. For more information, please connect with me on LinkedIn, send me an email to nathan@tushersolutions.com, or sign up for my newsletter at tushersolutions.com/newsletter. The newsletter is a copy of the show notes sent to your email each time an episode is released. Also, please subscribe to this podcast wherever you listen to the show. Thank you.